It's time for our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Simon Court.
The government has recently announced a new draft curriculum for years 0 to 10 that has seen changes to various subjects, including history, as per National ACT Coalition agreements. ACT Party leader David Seymour says the changes to the Aotearoa New Zealand's histories curriculum removes dismal, divisive and overly political big ideas. However, these changes have received criticisms from the New Zealand History Teachers Association over a multitude of concerns. For a weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Simon Court, I spoke to him about these changes. We also discussed Labour's capital gain tax policy and the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. But first, we talked about the government's proposed history curriculum. What are these changes to the country's history curriculum?
Well, students will study New Zealand history alongside ancient and global civilizations like Greece and Rome and Egypt, the Victorian era of Great Britain, which will give kids context and instill a sense of curiosity. The government feels it's overdue for the curriculum to move away from ideological instruction and towards a shared sense of citizenship, of equal rights, and mutual respect.
In a statement, the New Zealand History Teachers Association have expressed a variety of concerns, such as that the proposed changes would water down New Zealand history, that the draft included more content than teachers were able to teach in a year, that the curriculum lacked focus and did not adequately engage with representatives during the writing process. Why, at least according to the association, were representatives ignored in the process of writing this draft when they would be the ones implementing the curriculum to students?
Well, the old curriculum pushed a victims and villains view of New Zealand's past by claiming, for example, that Māori history was the only foundational and continuous story and treated the last 200 years as just colonisation and power struggles. So what the curriculum fix is intended to do is restore balance and end political bias in schools. And based on what you've just read out, it sounds like there's some parts of the teaching profession which just want to hold on to that. But what ACT's commitment is to fix what matters, and the new history curriculum does introduce that balance that has been long overdue.
As you mentioned before, there are a variety of different subjects that would now be taught to students taking history between years 0 and 10. These are quite a lot, as teachers say, to teach in 1 year. Will this be easily implementable for teachers, do you think? Is the government supporting teachers implementing the amount of subjects they're teaching students now?
Well, I cast my mind back to when I was at school and we didn't learn the entire curriculum in 1 year. These things no doubt will be broken down into age and stage appropriate components for children. And so I expect that teachers will be able to manage delivering all of this content between years 1 and 10. But of course, how much detail they go into about ancient Greece and Rome and the foundations of our democracy and institutions in any given year will no doubt depend on what age and stage they're teaching.
These criticisms join the likes of maths, dance, drama, music and visual arts teacher associations in also expressing their concerns for this draft curriculum. Is this deepening the divide between the education sector, many of whom have been striking lately, and the government?
Well, this government has said that we are concerned that the strike action appears to be politically motivated rather than focused on student outcomes. So I'll leave that with your listeners to weigh up, but we are also adding in other components such as financial literacy for years 1 to 10 so that young people understand how money works, how to budget and save so they can leave school ready to be independent in the real world. I'm sure that while teachers might not have been asked to teach and deliver that kind of content in the past, they will surely understand how important it is to children and young people to have that knowledge. So while there might be some disagreement over the details of the new curriculum, I have friends and family members who are teachers, and I know that they will approach this in a professional way.
On to our next topic. Recently, the Labour Party released their capital gains tax policy. The policy would cover property, excluding the family home and farms, and would help fund 3 free GP visits for all New Zealanders every year. How does the ACT Party feel about Labour's CGT policy?
We feel it's a solution looking for a problem, because you already pay tax on the income that your asset earns, and then Labor wants to tax you again when you sell it, even though the value of the asset comes from the same income that you use to buy the asset. It just seems like political signalling rather than serious policy, because you know, our contention is they're only pretending it'll fund free doctor's visits, but by their own admission, the tax won't raise a cent for years. So, look, it seems like a bit of a shot in the dark from a party that hasn't produced any serious policy for years, and I'm talking about also the years when they were last in government.
Would this policy at least be able to provide New Zealanders with the guarantee that more properties would be on the market, or that these policies would lower house prices to make sure that owning a home is more accessible to a lot of people, maybe in the long term?
Well, none of that was in Labor's capital gains tax announcement. It was around taxing businesses and taxing holiday homes. So if anything, it would only affect people at the margins. But again, the problem that New Zealand has isn't that we're not building enough homes. We can solve that through infrastructure and resource management legislative changes, which I'm responsible for alongside Chris Bishop. And you'll see some of those changes, some of that new legislation coming to the House in the next little while before Christmas. The problem isn't a lack of revenue. It's actually too much waste. And so what we should be doing is to encourage people to invest and encourage people to build businesses, not making everyone a tax accountant looking in the rearview mirror, worrying about how much things might have been worth on what Labor calls valuation day. And that's not going to help New Zealand go forward. It's frittering around at the margins, and even by Labor's own calculations, it's not actually going to produce any revenue for years and years and years. But I can tell you it's going to introduce a whole lot of costs into the economy as people try to work out how to comply.
Now, the Green Party have also been critical of Labor's CGT policy, saying the policy does not go far enough. Instead, they have called for a wealth tax. Co-leader Chloe Swarbrick says this wealth tax would not only provide free GP visits, but also free dental care, early childhood education, affordable renewable energy, electricity, and so much more. What does the ACT Party think of the Green Party's view on this?
Well, the Green Party has no credibility when it comes to economics and tax. If they bothered to look, New Zealand already taxes a lot. We're 34% of our gross domestic product of every dollar that our country earns is taxed, compared with Australia at 29% of their GDP. So the problem's not a lack of revenue. It's too much waste on things that actually don't produce any return. And you know, while I would agree with Chloe Swarbrick and the Greens that it would be great to see more investment in dental and other forms of healthcare, all of this requires significant trade-offs with the money we've got. This government is already investing an additional $16 billion over 4 years in the health sector. That's wages and salaries, that's buildings and facilities, that's training, that's making sure we've got the latest equipment, are you upgrading MRI machines that would otherwise break down so people can't get scans. All of these things are really important, but they do require serious trade-offs.
Lastly, we have seen a ceasefire be signed between Hamas and Israel recently. How are you feeling about this ceasefire agreement so far?
Well, initially confident, but it's worrying to see the ceasefire breaking down. Certainly concerning that Hamas has refused to stick to the terms of the agreement by returning random corpses to the Israelis rather than the bodies of the deceased hostages. But I'm sure that all parties will be trying to make sure the ceasefire does hold.
Authorities in Gaza say only a small fraction of essential aid has been let into the besieged Gaza Strip as a part of ceasefire agreements. We've also seen reports of Palestinians being killed by Israeli soldiers and by Israeli strikes since the ceasefire has come into effect. What needs to happen to ensure that a permanent ceasefire does stick regarding Israel's war on Gaza?
Well, firstly, Hamas need to stop hijacking aid deliveries to civilians, which is what they have been doing. It's been documented in the past few days. They need to stop hauling Palestinians out of their homes into the street and shooting them in basically mass killings, which has also been documented. There can't be a ceasefire if only one side respects it. And so I can understand why Israel has had to pause its ground operations to provide security, and you know, simply because if Hamas can't guarantee to hold up their side of the bargain, it's very, very difficult for one side to do it.
That was the ACT Party's Simon Court on the government's new draft curriculum, Labour's capital gains tax policy, and the ceasefire agreement between Israel and Hamas.
That was Simon Court from the ACT Party.